government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this March the 2nd on the West Coast, now March the 3rd on the East Coast, and in the Central Time. We'd like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, as well as on blogtalkradio.com on the internet. Lots to talk about tonight. Lots of old emails going circulating around, and I find it rather interesting. Well over a year ago, I came out with an article about the long-legged Mac Daddy and the bogus lineage, especially the one in Indonesia, the Lolo Satoru family photo. That seems to be making the rounds these days, along with a document that I debunked in The Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 7B. And if you would take a look at that on my website, you'll see that the so-called school registration document at the St. Franciscus of Assisi Catholic School in alleged to be in or have been in Jakarta, Indonesia, actually was written on the back of a piece of graph paper that has two Indonesian words that translate into scores and points, and it's used to grade a test. And this document was fabricated using the flip side of that. You can actually read the other side of the paper through the paper itself. Of course, the letters are backwards. I looked those words up, and they are in Indonesian. And so you have this this bogus picture, which is, by the way, a Photoshop compilation. These people are not together in this photo. They just added them. In fact, the original was even made into a color photo, and they've changed it to black and white. This is going around now as proof that Barack Obama was adopted into this Lolo Satoru family. And I'm telling everyone that that is as much a hoax as the Kenyan and the Hawaiian roots. Stanley Ann Dunham was not a mother to Barack Obama. So as long as they keep saying that, they're lying. Doesn't matter what picture or what document they put out. And that's the new email going around well over a year after the article had been written and posted on my website and parts of it published in the Idaho Observer. It never ceases to amaze me that some people are now just hearing the alarm clock. maybe they set it in their sleep. Nevertheless, we're going to move on to tonight's guest. He is a researcher. He is an author and a writer. He has his own very popular research website called educate-yourself.org, and his name is Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. A pleasure to be on with you again. I really enjoy these conversations that we have, and I'm getting a great deal of feedback from people who listen to other shows that we've done together, and I'm really glad to have this opportunity so we can have the sort of conversations that we typically have privately on the phone, yet it gives us an opportunity to have many other people around the world to hear the thoughts we're exchanging with each other. So I really appreciate the opportunity to create these audio archives.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ken, I don't know if you are familiar with the email I'm talking about. This started going around in the last couple of days. I find it fascinating that people claim that they've read my research or read the articles, mm-hmm. and they're passing this email around. They're very, like, as if I haven't seen this.
Yes. Well, I have encountered this often over the years, so it doesn't bother me anymore. It used to bother me somewhat. There's been more than one occasion in which I would be fairly out front in getting a story out. In some cases, I originated the story myself through my own research. In other cases, I exposed the information that someone else had discovered and perhaps sent me the info or perhaps sent me a more obscure blog where the info was posted, and I would reproduce the article on my website and would get a much larger audience. So it's happened on more than one occasion, particularly material that I had very much, you know, almost, I don't want to use the word pioneer, I don't want to hang laurels around my shoulders, but in some cases I was very early in getting important stories out on the internet in the 80s, and what has happened on many occasions is that 2, 3, 5, 8 years later, you'll get email from people who just discovered this information, and they'll tell me about it. So, you know, those people who send those emails don't realize that you played a significant role in getting the info out the first time around. So there's no point in getting
I'm not upset.
It's going to happen, Don. It's going to continue to happen as long as you're doing these very important expose stories that you've been working on, and you'll find they'll continually happen, and there's nothing you can do about it. So I typically just email them and say, thanks, I appreciate you thinking of me, and that way everyone feels good all around. But yeah, I would like to add a little clarification just for listeners who are brand new to the story. When you say that Stanley Ann Dunham was not the mother, what you meant was...
She's not the mother.
She's not the biological mother,
Natural
mother of Barack Obama. And again, just to make it clear for people who are new to the story, the man in Kenya, who came from Kenya, Barack Obama Sr., was not the biological father of Barack. So Stanley Ann Dunham and her family, meaning her mother and her father, are all agents for the CIA. And they were assigned, she was assigned the job of pretending to be the mother. So essentially, she was a surrogate mother in raising this boy. But he's not biologically related to either of those folks who were told. And again, to make it very basic for new listeners, a large percentage of the photos which the Obama campaign people put out on the internet in the year prior to the election, this, of course, is when he's running in the Democratic primary and so forth.
And into TV commercials, too.
Right.
Yeah.
A large percentage of those photos are faked photos. They were created with Photoshop. And they juxtapositioned photos of the so-called white grandparents with Barack, supposedly in New York Central Park. And there's so many errors in the photo that you've discovered. One of those errors being the date we were given for the photo, you'll have to remind me, when was the date, 1980-something?
What was the date? What are you talking about now?
In which he's sitting in the park with the...
That's alleged to be in Central Park South, just down the street from the United Nations building, and a hop, skip, and a jump from Columbia University in 1983, this is supposed to be.
Okay, that's the point. Now, they're claiming the photo was taken in 1983. Just one of the errors you discover in the photo is Barack is wearing a wedding ring in that photo.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't married until when?
1992, they say.
9 years later, they say. So this is a remarkable discovery. That's just one of many errors you've discovered in all of these photos. And if anyone takes the time to read your well-detailed articles about these frauds, they would see how blatant this fraudulence is. It's really blatant once it's pointed out to you. Once people can see, oh my God, these photos are composed in Photoshop. None of them were original because the participants weren't sitting together on that bench. They were simply assembled there. And the so-called grandfather, Stanley Armour, supposedly has his left arm around Barack at 1983. And if you merely look at the physiology of where the height of his shoulder is, there's no way his left hand could be over Barack's shoulder.
And his arm hanging down at his side.
Right. The arm is hanging down. In order for your hand to be resting on the left shoulder of Barack, who's sitting next to the grandfather, the left shoulder of the grandfather's arm would have to be elevated. It just can't be hanging down in the same position a arm which is totally, hanging down at his side would be, and yet have his hand. And the hand is, there's just so many anomalies.
Yeah.
Which you thought. It's such.
Left leg is 6 inches longer than his right leg.
Yes, right.
Up to
the
knee.
So what we're saying here is that beyond the discovery that they are false, phony, photoshopped photos, they were poorly done. Now, this work's supposed to be done by what these agencies with, I don't know who's making these, CIA, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
The family worked for them. But these guys are supposed to be the top of the creme de la creme of deception artists. They've only got multi-billion-dollar budgets to work with. All the high-tech, hidden technology from the public that they could possibly want. And yet they're such bumbling amateurs that they can't even get this photo, to be convincingly real for, someone who just was initially, at least, observing it casually. And yet you were able to see all these errors in the photo. I mean, it's really remarkable. I just can't get over how inept these people are. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, and, it doesn't matter if we're talking about the school photos alleged to be taken in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
or the photos taken in Southern California or in New York or Massachusetts or Chicago, wherever they're alleging these photos were taken, even the Indonesian photos, they're all photoshopped. They're all fabrications.
Right.
And in fact, you've never seen so many people floating in the air. I mean, these people
right.
aren't even
mm-hmm.
standing on the ground.
Yes.
These photos are so poorly done.
Right.
They're masked. They're obfuscated. And you saw what happened when I took that Indonesian picture, the one I was referring to at the top of the show, the alleged Lolo Satoro family, mm-hmm. and turned it into color, all the anomalies that began to appear
right.
in that photo.
Right.
If you start to expound on that, that's been an ever-increasing theme, by the way, pretty much around the world. This whole concept of who these people are, it's not it's come out of the closet. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's about time that it has. But it's simply remarkable what you can glean from photographs if you spend the time enlarging them and examining them closely, and with these computer programs like Photoshop that give you the opportunity to enhance the contrast and really enlarge it to, it's amazing the details that is revealed in them. And that, this has helped us discover important information about who these people are. But beyond that, it's proof to the general public who's unaware of these things by examining these enlargements and so forth, these photos. You can see that the statements we're making about the fact that, for instance, these Barack and Michelle are not fully human beings. They're hybrids. They're reptilian-alien hybrids, which is the theme of the conversation we had last month, the last show that we did together.
Yeah, and when you referred to that Columbia university picture, which by no means was Columbia University. It was intended to give that impression.
Give that impression,
Nothing in the photo matches. They literally, in inserting these people or compiling them into the photograph, they did it in pieces. Mm-hmm. And so they removed sections of the clothing off of the one side of the suit jacket or the outdoor coat. Or in Barack's case, his pants are made up of six different types of material and all obfuscated by darkening the whole photograph. Well, when I lighten the photograph, it looks like he's wearing Annie Oakley's and Roy Rogers' chaps, as if somebody got a piece of each one and sewed them together and made a pair of pants out of them.
Right.
The coat that Madeline is wearing is larger on one side. The lapel is larger than on the other side, and the buttonholes don't line up, and you know none of it matches.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally fraudulent. They're sitting on a crooked bench on flat ground.
Yes.
Yes. And it's supposed to be at a time when he's graduating in midsummer, but the leaves are turning.
Yes.
You know,
right.
Like they do in the...
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, maybe what we can do with the balance of the show tonight is that I'd like to perhaps expand on this theme of fraudulence in information presented to us, and how much of it, in fact, is shaped by intelligence outfits like the CIA, for instance. Beyond the photos being fake, beyond the background given to us on Barack Obama.
And the documents, too.
And the documentation. Everything is false. And, of course, the man was certainly not born in Hawaii, and he wasn't born in Kenya, and he wasn't born in Canada. He most likely was born in Indonesia, and the best information we got to date is that he was born on the island of Bali in Indonesia.
Well,
so obviously,
that's not exactly what General Jeremiah said. He said his record, his birth record, is on the island of Bali.
Okay, I thought he categorically placed the birthplaces there, but okay.
Yeah,
the birth records,
the record
he
is there.
Said if you move fast, you might be able to find the information before they vacuum it up. But I think we can assume he was born in Indonesia because he obviously went to school in Indonesia, and he obtained the passport to travel to Pakistan during 1980 when the U.S. did not allow passage to Pakistan. So there's a lot of, let's say, conventional information, documentation that still supports the idea that he was born in Indonesia and that his legal name was and still is technically Barry Sotoro, and that he supposedly attended, and there's little proof of this, but he supposedly attended United States universities on a Fulbright scholarship. Fulbright scholarships are given to foreign students who study in the United States. So there's an enormous amount of information that supports the contention that Barack Obama is not a native-born, American. And the ludicrous non-documentation that he was supposedly born in a particular hospital in Hawaii, there's no documentation to support that. There's no evidence of the doctor who supposedly delivers him there. None of the ordinary documentation that other people who are born in that hospital have or would have, he has none of it. And yet this is the story we were told again and again and again on all our mainstream TV propaganda outlets, Fox News, etc., and the derision that is leveled towards people who tried to get out the story. For instance, I just saw a YouTube clip a week or two ago in which a woman by the name of Joy Behar, who's one of the women who are typically part of that TV program, morning chat program called The View. She used to be a comedian long ago. Her comedic abilities have plummeted precipitously, but
yeah, she
anyway,
had a show on Headline News Network.
Yeah, there was some. She was sitting at some television station council there, and she had Orly Tates on as a guest, and she was absolutely browbeating Orly Tates, and hardly gave her a chance to speak, walked on her words, and she was almost indignant that Orly would suggest that Barack was not a natural-born citizen, because Joy Behar, the intellectual giant that she is, would breezily say, you know, everyone knows he was born in Hawaii. There's plenty of documentation. They've put his birth certificate on the internet. I mean, do you really think if he wasn't the president, if he wasn't born in America, he could be president? Come on, get real. I mean, she was browbeating her in that.
Yeah, he was born just after the Big Bang.
Yeah, right. So, It's an insult to people with intelligence to be subjected to people of such limited intelligence who are behind a desk in a TV camera who are given the opportunity to just, you know, pummel these people on their station. You see it, you hear it, I should say, on AM radio all the time when a caller will call in and challenge them. AM radio, you know, clear channel talking head who, you know, wants us to believe, you know, the government's cover story about, you name it, 9/11, about Obama's non-citizen status, etc. They'll just browbeat these people mercilessly. They won't give them a chance to say what they want to say. They'll just dismiss them, and it's always very derisive language, you know, wing nut, birther, conspiracy, nutcases, nutballs, etc., etc., etc. It's really an outrage the way people are abused by these propagandists. Now, speaking of propaganda, I just want to mention something since we're on the theme of deception that I heard this morning in NPR radio. I heard it quite early. It was a 5 or 6, 7 minute clip from Nina Totenberg, who's on NPR radio all the time. She used to be a regular on television, political talk shows, etc. Nina Totenberg is the offspring of a political family. I think her father was either a senator or a House of Representatives, I think, from Maryland. She comes from an elitist Illuminati type family. She's among the large number of TV, radio, quote, reporters, journalists. There are no such things, actually. They're propagandists for the Illuminati. But she went on and on and said simply remarkable, astounding things this morning concerning the, there's a case now before the Supreme Court about the Second Amendment, about, you know, the right to bear arms. And she said something that simply flabbergasted me. She says that I'm going to obtain the clip and write an article about it and include the clip in the article so people can hear exactly what I heard on the radio this morning. But it astounded me in so much that she played a propagandist role that I keep on accusing when I'm on these interviews, which I keep on accusing of NPR of steadily engaging in by distorting the facts, distorting historical records, but in a very subtle way often, so that they're teaching people who don't investigate. I mentioned that theme last time we talked, and don't really have an education in these areas. They will influence their beliefs. What Nina said this morning was that before the Civil War, that the states exhibited, let's say, greater rights than the federal government had. I'm paraphrasing very broadly, but that's essentially what she said. And she says, and after the Civil War, there was a shift of power from the state to the federal government. And she's going on about guns, the idea of a right to bear a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, the jurisdiction post-Civil War fell, the majority weight fell to the federal government. So therefore, the states cannot, let's say, insist on, the right to bear a gun, or bear arms, I should say, because they're subservient to the Fed's position on it. So while it's okay in a federal court to talk about the Second Amendment, that states and the cities within those states have the authority, she didn't use the word constitutional, but she said had the authority to regulate guns. And that, for instance, now the case before the Supreme Court has to do with the ability to carry or possess a gun in the city of Chicago. And what she and the other reporters that chimed in about this story are essentially saying that because of this shift of power structure after the Civil War, that the Supreme Court is probably going to affirm that the city of Chicago has the right to tell its citizens it cannot keep firearms, because it's only on the federal level that has constitutional merit. But on a state level, no, because she said now everything is, the states now are subservient to the federal law. Well, I'm here to tell you that she's full of beans. Every aspect of what she was patiently explaining, as if she was a history professor in a civics lessons, was absolutely bogus and false. Absolutely so. And that the Constitution of the United States, which was ratified in 1787, if I recall, applies to every state of the Union, not just in federal courts. It implies in state courts, it applies in city courts. The Constitution of this country is the supreme law of the land, Nina Totenberg. And therefore, the provisions in it carry full authority and weight in every hamlet and town and city throughout this country. So, as I was listening to it, I'm just telling myself, this is how they work their propaganda magic.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is how they do it. She just had the nerve to say something that's completely untrue about the Constitution and about the weight of states. And by the way, Nina Totenberg, the original 13 colonies that signed on to the Declaration of Independence and put together were founded prior to the establishment of the 14th Amendment, which followed. She was basing her whole premise on the so-called 14th Amendment, which is a subject we can spend an entire show about. We won't do it tonight. But that 14th Amendment is quite a, let's say, trick deal, because the thing was never ratified anyway. But they act as if it was. And they created something called the U.S. citizen. And I got news for Nina Totenberg. The U.S. citizen is a false classification which legislatures immediately following the Civil War created in order to give citizenship status to black people who were born in the United States. Because prior to the Civil War, they were considered property, slaves, at least in the South. And therefore, they had to create citizen status for them. So they created this totally contrived artifice called the U.S. citizen. And propagandists like Nina Totenberg, who's getting her marching orders via the Tavistock Institute of how to shape her propaganda, want us to believe that we're all people born in America, we're all U.S. citizens. I mean, isn't that the question they ask you all the time when you're, let's say, going to another country or you're at the border or you're given your passport or people ask you where you're from? Oh, I'm a U.S. citizen. Well, that's what they want you to say. Because that way you're ensnared within their 14th Amendment game. And this is where we get into this whole area of by acquiescing to the notion that you're a U.S. citizen, you're losing your sovereignty as a state citizen of the state that you were born in. The state citizens' founding constitutions were, in every case, established before a second constitution was established in every single state of this country, called the corporate constitution. Very few people know that the state they live in has two constitutions, because they didn't start the notion of, or the what shall I call it, the construct called the corporation until the late 1860s, early 1870s. It was in that period in which they drafted laws that established the whole idea of a corporation. Yes, you were going to say.
Well, no, it's all right. I had something I was going to say, but it's not important, and I didn't mean to sound like I was going to interrupt you.
Okay. So. All right. So I'll just wrap up on this point. I do plan to write an article about what I heard this morning as a perfect example of how we are deceived, and many of the personalities were told about through books and through Wikipedia and documentaries on propagandists, video production companies like Frontline, who we mentioned the last time we talked, etc. Try to convince the public that they're relaying true historical facts, as Nina Totenberg attempted to do this morning when she was telling one falsehood after another about the Constitution and the Second Amendment. And the, you know, examples we can look to is some stories which you and I have covered in the last 2 to 3 years, and it has to do with the individuals from the Third Reich of Nazi Germany who were secreted into this country following the war under Operation Paperclip, and they continued to build their Nazi empire from within this country.
Mm-hmm.
And one individual we know about because we essentially met thanks to this individual was Otto Skorzeny.
Mm-hmm.
Man named Eric, who was living in Florida, was dating a young gal whose father was introduced to him as Ed. And in December of 1999, Ed was apparently, weakening, and gave the appearance that he was going to die soon. And he revealed great deal of important information to this fellow Eric, and including among the anecdotes, he gave a shoebox full of photographs to Eric, who in turn took a number of the photographs and wrote up a story. It took him about 5 years or so to get it out, but around 2005 he put out a CD called The Bush Connection, and on the CD were a large percentage of these photos, along with a lot of text that Eric had written and put together, explaining the information that Otto Skorzeny passed on to him. And among those photos, there was a group photo of a very young George Herbert Walker Bush, perhaps at the age of maybe 15 years old. He's sitting in a room with other adults and children, and he's wearing a German Navy seaman's outfit. And sitting next to him in the middle of the floor is an adult who looks surprisingly similar to Prescott Bush. And sitting in front of Prescott Bush is a woman who looks amazingly similar to Barbara Walker Bush, the mother of George H.W. Bush. The other individuals in the room include people like Martin Bormann, Otto Skorzeny, Reinhard Galen, Joseph Mengele. And there's another adult or two and a number of children who I don't know who they are. There's an elderly woman sitting on a piano bench immediately to the left of Martin Bormann, who's also wearing, in that photo, a German Navy seaman's outfit. Is a woman who I identified on the photo as Mother Scherf. And we initially met as a result of an article you put in the Idaho Observer, I think it was in April of 2007, mm-hmm. which was about this photograph and the story that you, and the information you had gleaned from Eric's CD. And it dovetailed perfectly with a wider story, which you had been working on for a year or so, about the true background of not only the Bush family, but others of, let's say, German descent who were infiltrated into this country.
Yeah, those that made up the Federal Reserve and the Federal Reserve Act and the brokerage right. houses and the central banks.
Right.
Circuit Chautauqua, which was a social engineering program. Those that either supported or robbed Nikola Tesla. And then, of course, this Bush scam mm-hmm. Under the Scherfs.
Right.
By the way, I do have a document from Ellis Island where George H. Scherf admits he's from Dulwich.
Oh, well, isn't that something?
Yes, I do.
Dulwich is the town in Germany
that I identified, yeah.
That you identified as the true birthplace of the Scherf family. And that would include George Scherf Jr., the one who currently calls himself George Herbert Walker Bush,
mm-hmm.
former president of the United States. So,
and keep in mind that Reinhard Galen,
yes,
Martin Bormann, Otto Skorzeny, and Dr. Joseph Mengele are all in that photograph as well.
Yes, right, right. So that's why I wanted to kind of talk about that, because we're talking about deception. And in the revelations that Otto Skorzeny made to Eric, he told Eric directly that the history books say I died of cancer in Madrid in 1975, but obviously it was a faked death. And there's many deaths of famous individuals, particularly notorious individuals, such as the people, the top people from the Third Reich, whose supposed deaths were faked. One of those fake deaths was that of Joseph Mengele. The cover story is, and there's a very professionally produced book that's purports to be the full life story of Mengele. I have it, and very well written. The author has quite a history of writing interesting books. He kind of shapes history the way the CIA would prefer us to believe it. And anyway, the cover story is that Joseph Mengele spent the remaining period time in his life mostly in South America. And that he supposedly had drowned on a beach in Brazil, and that his his body was supposedly exhumed from a grave site in which they had reporters and photographers and people who supposedly knew Mengele when he lived in South America. And this was supposed to be proof positive that, well, this is definitely Mengele's skull. We've proven it, et cetera.
Now, would you like me to play some Brazilian beach music?
Well, no. We don't have to play Jobim. I just want to keep on going on the fakery of his death. So he did not die in 79. It was not his body that was dug up. I'm trying to remember the year. Was it 87, 89? I'm not sure. But it was somewhere there in the latter half of the 1980s in which this well-publicized discovery of Mengele's bones and et cetera. Total fakery. Mengele did not die at all then. Another guy's death was faked was Martin Bormann's. The cover story is that he was killed outside escaping the Berlin bunker in 1945 and was supposedly for a time he was escaping on the back of a German panzer tank who was trying to break out of the encirclement. They were encircled by Russian troops, but that he didn't make it, and someone claimed that he saw his dead body, etc. So that's the cover story. In fact, I got an email from a man in Germany who contacted me on more than one occasion, very, very helpful fellow, in which he says that he has a personal friend who was the panzer tank commander who, in fact, had pulled Bormann on board. It was his tank, he said. And I don't doubt the word of this man at all. I'm quite sure what he was told by his friend is what he was told. Mm-hmm. And there's more than an even possibility that the panzer tank commander was not working with the genuine Martin Bormann, but likely a double. Because certainly Hitler himself did not commit suicide in the bunker. The body that was found by the Russians, and later burned by the Russians, by the way, it wasn't the cover stories that were told in our history books, etc., and our documentaries from WGBH, is that the body discovered in the garden area behind the chancellery was burned of Otto, that the Nazis themselves had burned the body of Eva Braun and Adolf Hitler. Not true at all. A, they never found the body, supposed body of Eva Braun. The only body they found was that of the double of Adolf Hitler, who the Russians arrived in that bunker first, not the Americans, and they did not find the body burned at all. They found the body buried, but it was a double of Hitler, probably Hitler's cousin, who at one time was his chauffeur. He was shot, the bullet hole was exactly in the middle of his eyes and his forehead. And as you know, all the cover stories we get about the Hitler committing suicide has him holding up a gun to his right temple and blowing his brains out in the room where Eva Braun supposedly had taken poison prior to Adolf Hitler killing himself with that gun. That's not true at all. You can look at the photos, what is purported to be the body, the holes in the middle between his eyes. Now, anyone who's going to shoot himself in the forehead usually doesn't put the gun in the middle of your eyes and your forehead. That's not usually where you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what had happened is that the double was drugged until he was unconscious, and then one of Hitler's top lieutenant, possibly Skorzeny himself, I'm not sure, simply the man was laying on the floor, simply shot him through the forehead while standing over him. So that's why the bullet is located where it is. So Bormann's death was completely faked. In the 1980s, I think 1983, they were excavating the area to either rebuild or what used to be an area of a railroad station in Berlin, and the newspapers, all the magazines reported that they discovered the bones and skull of Martin Bormann, and they did forensic studies, and they absolutely affirmed that this is Martin Bormann, the teeth structure exactly the same, yada, yada, yada. Completely untrue. Bormann never died in 1945, and he went on to live. He might still be alive today, but he certainly was alive and well during the years Otto Skorzeny was taking photographs of him.
Yeah.
Mengele.
I think he's still alive. In fact, there's an issue about Hitler that I think is worth mentioning, and that's Skorzeny's claim that Hitler did not die, that Hanna Reich actually flew him and Skorzeny mm-hmm. to Austria. Mm-hmm. And then they escaped to Spain and went on to Argentina mm-hmm. from there, and then worked their way to a ski area. They stayed at a ski resort for a number of years before yeah. coming to the United States.
Right.
And we have numerous accounts of that.
Right.
What substantiates the claim that Skorzeny's making mm-hmm. is Hanna Reich in the middle of a bunch of wedding participants.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
The wedding mm-hmm. of Galen's son.
Of Galen's son. And
she's standing right in the middle on the second row behind the bride.
Yes, right. And that is one of the photos that are included in this group that Eric obtained from Otto Skorzeny mm-hmm. and are on his CD. Yes. And now that wedding either took place, I'm getting two dates in my mind, either 1983 or 1987. I think it was in August. That's the date on it. Can you recall whether it was 83 or 87? Okay, I don't want to put you on the spot. It's one of the two. Because what I was doing is I was doing some background research on Hanna Reich, and I think she died within 1 year of that photo, which is the reason I was asking. It might have been 87.
Yeah, I was going to say 87. And then there's the Lake McDonald Lodge photo somewhat later. That was an August 18th photo, I think, from 1997. Now,
yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and that's about the time that Eric talked with Skorzeny. Skorzeny began getting ill at that time and had died.
He talked to him in December of 1999. He talked to him the same month. He supposedly, the story is that Otto died on December 31, 1999. Now, Eric says he can't be absolutely sure, but that's the date he's supposedly died.
That's the date I found. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's the date that's being stated. What I'm going to say here, though, there's a possibility that he did not pass at that time. And again, I'm just saying it's a possibility. I don't know. It's something I'm going to look into. And the reason I'm saying that is that these very high-level people of the Third Reich, the upper tier of the Third Reich, because we're talking about the very highest group closest to Hitler. Now, of course, some people died near the end of the war. Joseph Goebbels, for instance, died. He committed suicide for himself and his family. Following the Nuremberg trials, before they had a chance to hang him, what's his name? The guy who ran the Air Force, Goering. Goering committed suicide with a cyanide capsule. A number of men were sentenced to death at the Nuremberg trial. We're not sure all of them actually died, but at least it appeared that they died. They were.
I know one that didn't die.
You're one. You're assuming one, and you might be right. Well, what I'm getting to though is those who did escape to America and South America, etc. Many of them did look in some of these photos that Eric provided. As the years rolled on, they don't quite look their age. And one guy who's doesn't look his age at all, because some of these photos are taken as late as 1998, is Joseph Mengele. In these photos, he's a rather large man, overweight, So his face is somewhat bloated in these later pictures. He was, let's say, more of he was slightly hefty in photos that we see in the 80s. In the 70s, he looked fairly, you know, trim. However, as it went into the 80s and into the 90s, becoming more, let's say, corpulent looking. But the appearance of his face, his hair, etc., looks more like he's a man in his mid to late 50s. And yet, if you look at his, I think he was born in 1911. I'm talking about Joseph Mengele. Mm-hmm. In the late 90s, you know, he would have been a man, you know, in his late 80s. And it's, So Eric, in talking to you, you've interviewed him a couple times, and talking to others, assumed that these guys were taking hormone injections and other, let's say, normal things that we're aware of to make them look younger. I believe that, in fact, all these upper echelon guys had access to alien-derived age regression technology. Al Bielek talked about this a number of times in his various talks that I talked to Al Bielek for many hours over the phone. I've heard many of his interviews on radio, on, you know, presentations he's done at conferences. I'm rather familiar with Al Bielek's material. And he's brought this up a number of times. He said that the Germans, the Nazis, were in contact with aliens, negative alien groups, essentially, from the early 1930s onwards.
I would even go so far as to say some of them are the negative alien groups.
Oh yeah, I'm saying exactly that. The positive aliens, you know, wouldn't associate with the Hitler regime. But no, these are negative alien groups, and that they obtain technology from them. Certainly, a great deal of technology on flying saucers, but beyond that, time machines. Al Bielek said they had access to time machine again in the 1930s, and he also mentioned repeatedly age regression technology, in which a person could be subjected to these energies, and the cellular structure of his body, entire body, would be reversed in time. Therefore, they could age regress a person. And I'm absolutely convinced this is what technology that has allowed Mengele, Galen, Bormann, and certainly Adolf Hitler himself, who we believe died at the age of 114 in 2005, is it, or 2004, I'm trying to remember, under the name of William Coates. I believe it is this alien technology, 2004, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe it's this alien technology that has allowed them to continue to exist in the physical plane. Now, I'm bringing this up first to emphasize the notion about deception, that these men had continued to live and continued to operate, and undoubtedly people like the Bushes also have access to this technology, and this is perhaps why George Herbert Walker Bush looks so relatively young and trim for a man of his age. If he was aging, let's say, normally, you'd think he'd look a little bit older than he does. So I have the feeling that the Bush family has access to this technology as well, and who knows how long George Sr. and George Jr., et cetera, will continue on this planet. If you have access to this stuff, they might go on for quite a while. However, that we've discovered some interesting pieces of information in that, yes, these guys have been able to look much younger and, let's say, live in a younger body. But they can't escape, let's say, completely from the third-dimensional laws. And if they are the original personality, even though they're having technology that can make the tissue of their body reverse in time and look younger and maybe function, they still have the astral body that's superimposed on the physical body. And the astral body has a template that ages from the time of birth. So Joseph Mengele, born in 1911, his astral body, his etheric energy templates, his chakra systems, etc., are all aging because his clock started in 1911. And even though he could, let's say, time reverse the physical tissue of his body, he can't time reverse his astral body or his astral template. So what you would have with a fellow like him is that, yes, into outward appearances he would have a younger physical body, but inwardly he's still the age, his astral age and his templates are still starting from 1911, if you understand what I'm saying.
Sort of so, like he's Rumpelstiltskin living in Pee Wee Herman's body.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, I know this sounds really, really strange.
May not be the best example. But.
Yeah, this conversation, but I'm saying it because I believe this is what has actually occurred. And if, let's say, there's an energy matrix that's allowing this younger body to, you know, to hold its shape, let's say. There's an energy matrix allowing that. What if you were to break this, well, let's call it an apparent warp in time and space, and remove that energy matrix? What logic is telling me is that the body now would rapidly accelerate in age to the true age of the astral body and the astral template. And if that were to happen, that person would suddenly become an old man. And let's say, in the case of Mengele, he would be, let's say this is the year 2010, he's born in 1911, he'd be 99 years old today, okay? Now, it's possible to still be alive at 99, but let's say you were in a body, oh, let's say of he had perhaps when he was in his mid-30s, and suddenly he lost that energy matrix that was holding that younger cells in place. He lost that. He would rapidly accelerate to the age of 99. Let's say that journey would happen in a very short space of time. That would probably take him out right then and there. And I have a feeling that this phenomena might unfold. These guys are, let's say, totally confident and dependent on this technology, keeping them together because they physically look like they're a younger guy. But I contend there's ways to, let's say, take a look at these guys on the astral plane and perhaps unify your efforts with others to withdraw this energy from them, because everything we're experiencing in life, what we call reality, are all dependent on the thoughts we all use to create reality. And that if we, you know, form our thoughts in a certain avenue, and we do that collectively so that we would, let's say, build up a larger charge to this thought battery, let's call it, we can oftentimes change physical reality. Usually the change happens very gradually, slowly, but in other cases it can be accelerated, because it could be that the thing we're trying to change is so harmful and so deadly to the progression of humanity that, well, let's say we get some special dispensation from the God force, from the creative force, to allow these, let's call them neutralization activities to take place at a faster rate of, unfoldment, we'll call it. And if one were to look at some of the essays that are posted to my website that I had posted from Don and Carol Croft. I call them The Adventures of Don and Carol Croft. There was about 90 of them, I think. They span a period of approximately 4 years, I believe, from 2002 to 2006. And in a number of those essays, Don talks about how they learn to use this mental will and apply it to the astral plane, and they were able to, let's say, stop people who were intent on harming them, perhaps intending to kill them. And they were able to stop them cold in their tracks by applying this mental energy, these thoughts. And the way you do it is you work through your heart chakra. Now, as odd as it sounds, if you, let's say, transmit this desired outcome through your heart chakra, and you do it with a certain amount of emotion, because there seems to be two elements that make things work faster on the etheric plane. That is, first, the will, the focused thought itself, or what we call focused intent, but combined with the energy of an emotion. Now, it could be, let's say, a negative emotion like anger or hatred, but what works better is a positive emotion, like love. Let's say the love of humanity, the love of preventing negative forces from polluting our breathable air with toxins from chemtrails in order to preserve people's health and prevent them from being poisoned. The love of not seeing innocent people die in war zones like Iraq and Afghanistan. That's what I mean by sending out these intentions with love. The purpose is to stop the evildoers from committing crimes against humanity. That's what I mean by the love. And in order to effect that, these perpetrators have to be stopped in some way, and stopped in the effective way that will prevent them from going forward with this killing, this assassination, whatever negative intention that they were pursuing. And there's a fellow, I'll sort of wrap up with this thought. There's a fellow who put together a guide, I mentioned in the last talk, but I want to repeat it here, of how to learn how to operate in the astral world and to engage in this, what shall we call it, defensive action. Because with
self-preservation, if you want to call it.
Self-preservation.
Yeah.
Because if we don't look into this area, we would have between little and no chance of stopping the New World Order, because they have all the resources in their corner. They have all the technology, the secret technology. They have all the money. They have all the underground bases. They have all the armament. They have all the paid goons, you know, on their payroll, et cetera. We wouldn't have much of a chance if we couldn't access this, let's say, this area, a theater of operation, let's call it that. And just like the internet has been a saving tool for a large part of the world to find out truthful information about what's taking place in the world, you will find that if you look into developing these techniques for entering the astral plane, that you can effectively engage in a, let's call it, neutralizing operation. And a number of people have been doing this. I mentioned to you that Lily Oshesu got a group called the Women's Warrior. Her link is on my website at the top of each page. If you look for the word Women's Warrior, she's doing this work. Don Croft also has a group called the Etheric Warriors. They are doing this work. And certain individuals are doing this work. Let's say they are on a solo mission or sometimes a duo mission. And others, groups of people are doing this work, and they're not on the internet. They're not broadcasting what they're doing, but they're doing the work silently, and they're doing it in the interest of helping humanity stop these evil agendas from going forward, and there's plenty of them, so we honor and recognize them as well and understand completely why they wish to remain anonymous. But anyway, getting back to the guide, I put the guide now at the top of my current news page. It's either under featured art. Yeah, I believe it's under featured articles. It used to be farther down the list on the current news in the July postings of last year, but now I've placed it as well at the top. So anyone who's hearing this broadcast, please take the time, go to my current news page and look for that guide. It's how, the name of the guide is How to Fight Monsters and Win by Jack London. And people really need to look into that, because the information I was talking about tonight about how these very dark individuals who rose to power in Nazi Germany in the 1930s and did a great deal of evil things during the war years, did much more evil, humanity-destructing things after the war, and were, in fact, engaged in this country with even darker plans, as you probably well know, that Dr. A. Truat, very recently coming out with a very important article exposing the plans of a huge NSA operation to be built in Utah that's going to essentially be the vehicle which they will control people via these nanochips they've been inserting in their bodies with the vaccinations, etc. And I believe that these ex-Nazi folks were involved in that operation. Well, some changes occurred in the last couple of days to a couple of those fellows. I won't get into great detail, but the changes that were affected were in a positive direction for the sake of humanity. And those changes came about because of the sort of work and the methodology which Jack London explains in his guide. That's why I'm suggesting to people to carefully read that guide and study it. It is a tutorial on how to engage these monsters on the astral plane, and it does work. So with that, I'll voluntarily close out, give you a chance to give the closing credits, Don.
Well, there is one issue that I would like to briefly mention before we sign off here, okay. And that is these hearings that are occurring in Washington in regard to Toyota Motors and this alleged sticky gas pedal, the accelerator issue. I tend to think, and Toyota recently made a comment that they think that something's actually wrong in the computer systems of these cars. And I think my intuition tells me that the computers are actually being sabotaged.
There you go.
And that they should be grilling GM and yes. Ford and Chrysler
right.
over the coals on yes. the basis of just turning billions of dollars over to
yes.
them, and then eventually the federal government taking over GM. Can no one else see what's going on here?
Yes.
They're trying to eliminate their competition is what they're
doing. This is amazing. The synchronicity is amazing. Quickly, I had the same thought today. When I was driving around, it occurred to me that this is a computer-controlled acceleration. This is not, it's easy to set it up so the gas pedal will not catch on the rug or et cetera, so it can't accelerate on its own. The mechanical part is easy. This is a computer, and I'm telling myself, I'm wondering if this is sabotage. You just said that. And it also occurred to me, I'm hearing some politician today proposed a bill that would force Toyota and other manufacturers to have a system in which the braking system is tied in with the rapid acceleration. I'm hearing this on the radio today, in which, and you just said the story right there. It's the old story, problem, reaction, solution. Mm-hmm. We're just then delivered a problem reaction solution scheme. And you just hit the nail on the head. Amazing.
And I'll tell you one thing. I have a Ford vehicle, okay, and it's gone through a ton of factory recalls. And they turn around and they give billions of dollars to Ford. So, yes. And I'm not the only one that's gone through this. And it's well beyond, you know, I don't have to get this vehicle repaired. I just wait for the next factory recall and replace it with something new.
Right. Amazing.
That's how they do business in this country.
Right.
But bingo. It hit me like a ton of bricks when I saw Olympia Snow grilling this guy.
Okay, there you go.
What the hell does she know about cars?
Right, feeder. There you go. Beautiful, okay. Dan.
And I'll rest my case there. So
excellent. Wow.
You know.
What a way to finish the show. Very good.
But keep thinking outside the box, folks, and you'll figure it all out. Ken, I want to thank you. It was very interesting and I think timely for us to talk about this. I had to mention that email that's going around. Just perturbs me that people are acting like this is something they just discovered. This has been out there for a while, folks. Catch up. Wake up. So I want to thank you. You're going to be on again. When is it? Next week, right?
Next week. So I think it's next Wednesday. So I look forward to that, and thank you for this chat session as well.
Okay. All right. Well, you have yourself a great evening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. Allison Jones, the vaccine researcher, is going to be on again, and we're going to go deeper into this whole issue of what happens when you get a vaccine and what is dangerous and what you should know, what no one out there is telling you. It's tomorrow night on Evident Footprints. Time to say goodnight. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's special guest, Ken Adachi. Please visit his website. Go to educate-yourself.org. You can spend months and months and months there and not read everything that's on the site. Lots of good information. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Also want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. In the meantime, I wish everyone out there a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.